Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 10th. It's nice to have the music back, as I forgot it last week. But how you doing? Jim Allen is with me. How you doing on a beautiful, rainy Sunday morning? And it is beautiful. I went for a run before the rain started, so I know it is a beautiful morning.
It's like the start to Oklahoma. Instead of, oh, what a beautiful morning, it's, I know it's a beautiful morning.
Exactly.
And we've got the music going. I'm dancing here. Okay, I'll stop. I'll slow down enough. I'm good.
Don't mess up your pins. Don't get your pins shifting.
I don't have pins. I have screws.
I keep saying pins.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to W the Pin Man, and it just, you know, I had it in my mind. It's set in stone.
Well, I'll ask the doctor if he can replace the screws with pins for your convenience.
Free of charge, of course.
No. No, how much are you willing to pay for me to have pins in my leg and for me to have another surgery?
Well, I'm just going to have to say that you're screwed.
Well, I would say that to you, but I don't speak like that all day.
All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Audi Siriaco of the Yokohama Bay Stars, and we're going to talk about the Bay Stars and one-week impressions and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right. The other day I had a couple of chats this past 10 days or so with Audi Siriaco. I'm going to say Siriaco to be better. He's still probably, when he hears it'll be shaking his head, but he'll do it with a smile on his face because he's about the, you know, he's just one of these really nice and easygoing guys. And, you know, you're getting sent, he has since been sent down to the farm team, and he was probably going, yeah, good, I can dig it. So he had a red hot spring.
Yes, he did.
And that's part of the discussion. It didn't really appear in that was sort of the background. I'm thinking, wow, who's this guy? And I mentioned that I saw him have one at bat in Okinawa while I was waiting for an interview.
Right.
And it was slider, 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 hanging slider, single.
Right.
And I thought, oh, okay, that tells me nothing. And I mentioned that to him. He says, yeah, you know, they keep throwing the same thing and I'm going to hit it. And so I also had, ironically, on Wednesday, I believe it was Wednesday, I spoke with him again just before he was sent down. And I also talked with Alex Ramirez about him. And so anyway, let's hear what the original talk with Audi, what he has to say. And then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
So speak on Audi.
Our guest this week on the podcast, and I'm going to try to get your name right, is Audi Siriaco.
Yes.
That's kind of...
kind of different to pronounce in the beginning, but... Once you pronounce it a couple of times, you're gonna get easier.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm just thinking how bad my Spanish is, which is like zero. Okay. So anyway, welcome to Japan, and how has everything gone so far for you?
First of all, thanks for this lead like moment in your program. So I mean, it has been really nice. You know, I was here last year for a little bit in independent ball. I learned a lot of stuff and. Now that I'm in this baseball, it's a lot different than last year. You know, I mean, the baseball quality is a lot more better and, you know, the facilities and everything. It's a huge, you know, change, and I've been enjoying it.
Okay. Well, tell me, what was some of the differences? What was some of your first experiences coming to play in independent ball?
Well, like, we have to help, like, fixing the field and stuff, putting, like, flag and stuff on. I mean, I didn't mind because that was the team stuff that we have to do, so that's something, you know, I knew I have to do. But like, since I was playing ball in America, you know, we didn't have to do any of that stuff, like, you know, on the field, just practice and, you know, get ready for games. And that was a new experience for me, something different.
Okay, now you spent a long time in AAA,
yes.
And like the king of AAA, and then you come to independent ball. It's obviously it's the reason for coming to Japan and playing in independent ball was to get a chance to play in NPB, or?
Yeah, that was my main goal. Like, I spent a few years playing AAA, And I didn't know what could happen, you mm-hmm. know, next, but I wanted to, you know, to get this chance mm-hmm. and coming here. So I decided that, you know, like I want to try this first. My agent, you know, got in touch with the teams, but they were full. So he told me there was an option to go to an independent ball team. So I was thinking about it, you know, I wasn't really sure. So mm-hmm. I keep talking to teams in America. And, you know, we were waiting for a few teams to give us answers because I don't think we were going to be able to get, like, a big league invite and stuff like that. So I just decided to come here and give it a try.
You were in Shikoku last year? Or in that BC League?
In BC League, Ichikawa Million Stars.
Oh, okay. So now, obviously, there's a lot of foreign players are now going to independent ball in Japan, which is kind of surprising. This year, you have Manny Ramirez is playing in independent ball. That's so strange.
I know. I mean, that's his life. That's a guy that loves playing ball, and everywhere he plays, he enjoys it. So, you know, if you can play. I mean, the guy can hit. He still can hit, and if you want to enjoy, you know, his life playing ball, you know, let's see him. He's given us so much, you know, fun, like mm-hmm. to watch him and stuff like that, and he want to keep doing it. You know, I'm glad to see this.
Yeah, more power to him.
I know.
Okay, now I was just talking to Jose, and he's been here a long time and seen a lot, and I asked him what was the lesson what advice would he give new guys coming into NPB, and he said, learn Japanese baseball.
Yes.
So what did you learn? What have you learned about Japanese baseball since you got here?
Well, I mean, it's a lot different than America is. I mean, definitely different, but, you know, I'm just trying to learn as much as I can, and I'm not here to change the way they play. I'm here to learn how they play. So I'll take that advice from him, and I'm just keep watching and learning, and, you know, just try to go with the game, go with the flow, and I'm just, you know, I'm still learning. So I'm this early. Just two games in the season, so a long way to go.
Well, two games into the season, but you're also coming off a really good spring training and a good preseason. So what was your focus, obviously, coming out independent ball? Maybe you didn't know quite what to expect in NPV.
Yeah.
Although you probably saw some on TV, but
yes.
Playing in the spring games, how was that?
Well, I mean, it helped me a lot that I played last year mm-hmm. here in independent ball. Like, pitching quality is not the same. This is like a high level, but it helped me a lot on the timing,
okay.
Like the way they pitch
right.
here, you know, leg kick. Yeah, so that helped me a lot on that. I really struggled in the beginning,
okay.
but I got used to it, and then, you know, I'm trying to make more approaches.
Okay.
And I think that helped me a lot to go into the preseason here,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'm just glad that I could do the job and, you know, make the club.
Okay, let me ask, now, have you adjusted your approach to the Japanese way of pitching a little bit?
Yes, I mean, I'm still working on that because I don't know all the guys. Like,
right.
most of the time we face the other league,
right.
Like other divisions.
Preseason, right.
Yeah, so I don't really know how, you know, they pitch. So I'm trying to learn as much as I can, you know, try to battle my first time through and learn from that and try
uh-huh.
to make the adjustment as quick as I can because, you know, I haven't got a lot of, like, chance to hit against them. So
right, and they haven't had a chance to see me.
So, yeah, okay. I mean, same page. We're both on the same page.
Okay. So what are your strong points as a hitter?
Well, I'm just trying to go in there and try to be patient, like, see my pitch, and, you know, if it's good, if I think that's my pitch to swing, I'm just trying to put my best swing on it, you know. I can be really, like, thinking a lot on the plate because, you know, one day let the ball go. You know, you just
right.
have to try to see if that's the ball you want to hit or you have a chance on it and try to put a good swing. I mean, obviously, it won't work all the time, but if you do that, if you got that approach, look for your pitch and try to put the best swing you can on it, you know, a lot of good things can happen.
Now, where are you from in the Dominican Republic?
San Pedro de Macorís.
Oh, wow, the baseball capital.
Yeah, we have a lot of players from there.
Okay, so when you were growing up, how old were you when you first started playing baseball?
Since I remember, I played ball.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, yeah. Since I was a kid, I remember, I enjoyed playing that. We started playing in our neighborhood, just in the backyard, you know,
uh-huh.
just for fun as a kid. And then as I was growing up, you know, I understood that I got a chance to, you know, play ball, you know, on a professional level. So I just keep playing, you know. I mean, this is fun to play, and then you get paid for it.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Okay, well, we're going to wish you good luck, and thank you so much for joining us and sharing your time with us.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Good luck. Take good health.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, man, and hopefully we'll see you back on the first team pretty soon.
I hope so, yeah. I had a chat with him at Cebu Dome when I went out to do the interview with Ernesto Mejia, mm-hmm. and I told him about the show and said, you know, hopefully we can have you on, and we look forward to it, and I chatted with him about the differences you know, that he has experienced so far in, mm-hmm. in Japan, but, and talked to him about playing indie ball just like you. It was a similar conversation, but you got into a little bit more detail.
Well, he didn't talk too much about the indie ball, the raking and so on. But what anything that caught your ear?
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. I loved that story of taking care. And you know, when I started taking care of the field, I should finish the thought, right? And I'm sure you know, taking the bases out and back, you know, to set up the field to get ready to play and practice, and probably they have to drag the cage out there, and you know, this just brings you back to being in high school and playing high school ball, which I never did, but
it brings you back to understanding.
I saw a lot of it. Yeah,
yeah.
I saw it.
I observed it.
Yeah. So, you know, that part, you know, when you join a Japanese company, and I worked for a small Japanese company in Nagoya for a time, and you're responsible for cleaning, you know, you come in and you do the vacuuming and you wipe down all the desks, you dust, you move all the plants and dust behind them. I mean, wow, you're supposed to take care of your company as well. And that's the way indie ball makes you appreciate the top level here in Japan, where you don't have to do those things. And I think you gain that appreciation when you do those things.
Yeah, I saw that, you know, where I saw that first was at, I believe, Tachikawa Stadium. And I was watching the Nippon Ham Fighters and the Yakult Swallows of Eastern League Farm teams play. And because it wasn't one of their home fields, there was basically no ground staff. So you saw the Swallows were the home team. So their kids fresh out of high school were out there doing the raking and the groundwork.
Yeah, the groundwork, exactly.
For the scene, so the older guys could play.
Right.
And they're saying, this is like different from high school ball in what way?
But I was kind of not impressed, but I was wondering why he didn't talk about the fact that the communication was difficult and there's no interpreter like we've heard in the past. And I believe that was a team that has a guy who speaks English. I remember, as you know, I went down to when Julio Franco was playing with that team.
He was managing the Million Stars.
Player manager, okay. I went down and talked to him, and there's a guy who speaks English with the team, so probably he didn't have to, he wasn't exposed to a situation where he was there was a language barrier and there was no one there to help him. So I kind of expected him to say that. And I also liked the pivot he made when you asked him what he has learned about NPB so far, and he did one of those Kellyanne Conway pivots where he really didn't say anything about that. He just started to talk about trying to learn as much as possible. And he didn't give any examples or any specifics. I thought that was a good move on his part, because a lot of times I don't even ask players about specifics because I know they won't tell us, but and that wasn't a specific, I didn't think, but I don't think he wanted to get into what he picked up on.
Well, I think also, he had at that time played four games, and I don't think he had a hit. He might have had one hit. And the bit when I asked, you know, he's about to get sent down, and I asked Alex Ramirez, and I said, you know, obviously you see something in his hitting, and he says, yeah, I see it, but in spring training, and here's one of the things about spring training is, one of the things is that we saw Pacific League pitching. In Japan, the past 10 years or so, the preseason has basically consisted of Central League teams playing Pacific League teams.
Right.
Either they don't play, you know, Alex Ramirez said 14 of the 16 games they played were against Pacific League teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys didn't care about throwing him anything but fastballs.
Right.
Right. And he was hitting them. Since then he comes and he sees he's facing guys he's never faced, and they're not just throwing fastballs, and suddenly it gets a lot more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked Alex, you know, if it reminded him of himself, and he said, oh, yeah. He says, oh, yeah. I says, you know, how did you start? He says, it's terrible. He said, I was leading the league in strikeouts for the first 2 months. And so, you know, so what's the difference? He said, the difference is we expect to win this year. And so he doesn't have a job. He doesn't own a job.
Right.
When I was with the Yakult Swallows in my first year, they just left me out there. They said, we know you're going to hit, so just hit. He said, I can't afford to do that. He said, I can't afford to have a guy who's going to go 0 for 50.
Right. Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so that it was interesting. And so he said basically he hasn't figured it out. He's having trouble with pitch recognition, maybe. He's not going after perhaps the best pitches he's going to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first strike slider or the first strike fastball that's not maybe exactly in his hitting zone.
Right.
But if it's a strike, then he's not going to see anything better than that.
Well, he and I, we talked about that, and I said, you know, I've been out here in Japan for covering baseball and talking to players for more than 20 years, and someone sent it on, I don't remember when it was, and maybe it was on Twitter, maybe it was on the Facebook page. They sent us a link to somewhere in which someone came here in the 60s, and they said, wow, you know, they pitch backwards here in Japan. They throw a lot of breaking balls, and so we've heard these stories for so long, for so many years, and people come here and they don't do any research and they don't talk to people and they don't know what to expect, and it just drives me nuts. And he said, yeah, I know what to expect, and I've done the homework, and I've talked to guys, and I've talked to Alex, and I kind of get, you know, how they pitch. But we've discussed this too, knowing it and applying it in an actual at-bat against guys who are trying to get you out, trying to destroy you, trying to make sure that you don't beat them is a lot different. And the guys get locked in.
Sure. I mean, sure. And the other thing, as he said, the quality of pitching is different. I think right now he's going to be in the Eastern League, where he's in that intermediate level between indie ball and NPB.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be facing guys who've played at the top level here and some guys who've played, you know, probably played in the majors. So it's going to be a better warm-up for him. A lot of guys do very well tuning up there rather than an MPB.
Right.
Less pressure, more swings, more practice time in terms of, you know, actually focusing on the practice instead of doing the pregame jumping jacks and calisthenics and yoga.
yeah, so. But yeah, just like you said, though, the pitching, it's just everyone, and we saw it in the WBC where Tomoyuki Sugano pitched well, and then Kodai Senga pitched well, and all of a sudden you heard, wow, we didn't know these Japanese players had this much pitching, and I'm like, that's all we ever talk about. That's all we ever go through about how good the pitching is, how many guys come here and fail.
Well, yeah, but of course, the whole WBC thing, as you've pointed out several times in the past, was not about how good Japanese pitching is. We just assume that's true. But really, how few major leaguers they have and why they can't possibly win.
Yes, the great research effort.
That's right.
I don't recognize any of these names. They can't be good.
Exactly. Let's not get me started in that direction, or else the listeners will get 100 minutes of just noise. So anyway, yeah, it was really interesting, and the interesting thing was I asked, I'm going to go on more with Alex Ramirez, was I asked him if, you know, in January, he came out and he said a really interesting thing about his managing. And he said, I learned a huge lesson in that he was blaming the players basically for his failures.
Right. I remember you discussing that on the show.
Right. Right. And so I said, now that you've decided you're not going to blame the players, you're not going to play guys out of position like you did to punish them, is it a little easier for you? Is there a little pressure off your shoulders, you know, now that sort of silly, silly nuclear option is off the table. And he said, no. He said, no, because he did a great one. He says, everyone's expecting us to win a championship. We're expecting to win a championship.
Right.
he did a little autocorrect there.
Verbal autocorrect.
Yeah, before I said, well, not everybody. So anyway.
I'm not.
Yeah, I didn't want to raise my hand and interrupt him because he was being very, he was
so
speaking.
Polite. You're so polite.
He is. Well, no, he was letting me talk because of my bad leg, and I couldn't wait for him to finish to come off the field after practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, he was being generous. And so we were both being generous. Anyway, so he said, interestingly enough, he used the same expression in his post-game interview after they lost that night to the Giants, and it was a gammon, which is being patient or, you know, waiting your turn and not rushing too much. He said there's a difficult point. There's a fine line between gammon and losing.
Right. Yes, there is. Yeah.
So at some point you have to decide, is this a positive? Is this being patient helping you, or is this being patient paving the road to the lower half of the league?
Right, to failure.
Exactly. So that was the whole bit, and Audi is, I think, a positive, and he's ready to learn, and I think he just needs a little easier learning environment, as Alex says. I think he's going to go down to the farm team. He's going to pick some stuff up that's going to help him compete for a job, and I expect we'll see him do something with that team. The other thing that was interesting when I spoke to him the second time was I came better prepared. I hate to say that, but sometimes we are better prepared than other times. And I had a look through his baseball reference teammates in winter ball and in the minor leagues.
Right, Siriaco you're talking about.
Yeah, and he basically could have fielded a team with all the guys he played in NPB from his teammates.
Another guy who's got an extensive background with former
Tony Blanco played with him in winter ball, and Zach Ikuma told me that Audi told him that Tony was kind of a mentor to him, which I can believe because Tony's such a big, friendly guy.
And, he is, yeah.
And all kinds of guy, Werfen Obispo and Mike Zagurski, and almost like you name it, Toru Murata. And I said, did you talk? And he says, oh, yeah, great guy. And I said, have you talked to him? I saw him and I said, hi, but, you know, we haven't talked much, but... But I remember asking him, telling me about Japan. They were teammates for 2 years.
That's the former Giants pitcher who went to the States and is back now with the Fighters.
That's correct. So lots of stories there, and Audi is such a great. He has a great way with the English language, and I'm really looking forward to talking to him some more.
Yeah, he was fun, and I'm sure we'll see him back up on the first team. Hopefully it's sooner than later. He's got a great swing. I can't wait for him to get used to the pitching and then just help that team compete, because I really like the swing and I think it's going to play well here. It is kind of long, but I still think it...
Yeah, he's got that. The other thing is, interestingly enough, is the guy basically who took his job away in this, whose job he took away in the spring, Miyazaki, is now playing third base like he really means it.
Yeah, you think, you know, like I say, we talked on last week's show, is the guys work on things in the off season, and it looks like he has worked on his defense enough to stay out there longer.
Yeah, so batting fifth and hanging in there and knowing that his clock is also ticking.
Right, everybody's clock is ticking, because I think the manager had a 2-year deal and this is year two, so.
All right.
Well, looking at the Bay Stars, they're 2-5 as we speak here, and again, it's Sunday morning, so they haven't had a great start. I don't really know what Alex is doing with the rotation. I would have had it in a different way, but I think they did get some good performances from the foreign pitchers, and I think they've had some good starts.
I mean, they've had some good starts from most of the Japanese guys, but you know, somebody gets hurt, and the pitching they faced has been really good, so it's been tough for them.
Yeah, Phil Klein and Joe Wieland, I think they had to be happy with the efforts that those guys gave.
Joe Wieland was quite good. Phil Klein was kind of like, he was good enough to get another start.
Yeah, but I mean, I just think your first outing in Japan and we'll hear from some pitchers, we've heard from them in the past, and we'll hear from some in the future, foreign guys who come over and say, man, the way these guys foul pitches off and stay up there and stay alive and torment you. I think when you get in there and get in the regular season, not in a preseason situation, and you're dealing with this and you're having to deal with nerves and the pressure of trying to win a regular season game. And I told you these games, I really expect it to be very difficult competition every night to win games. They're not going to come easy. And the Dragons and Bay Stars have played two games already and played a bunch of innings that have been really close. And we've seen it. And not just them, but you get these guys out there. I just don't think it's going to be easy. So I think that was a good enough start for him in that first one.
Well, I think the Dragons have been told that they're getting paid by the inning.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. We actually dole out overtime here. You guys can earn some extra cash.
Exactly.
This is how you get your bonus.
That's right. I think they've been told that they get the cut of the concessions after the ninth inning.
Right.
Both teams.
And this other thing about Hiroyasu Tanaka at second, and you know, like I said, I really didn't expect him to be playing that much, and I thought it made me look it up, and I know that he and Alex Ramirez were teammates for a brief time.
Oh.
I kept thinking, okay, well maybe Alex has something that he has always seen in Tanaka that he never told him about his swing that he could fix, and if he can make those adjustments and make the mental adjustments, he can hit. And I mean, he's not hitting poorly. He's hitting over 300 right now.
Well, he's hitting like a guy who's trying to earn his job, keep his job on the team.
Exactly. And the more
at the start.
Well, you know, and I was talking to one of the reporters when I talked to Audi that day. I talked to one of the reporters who said, yeah, he's trying to learn other positions and do whatever he can to stay on the team, be that utility guy, because if he can't do all those things, if he's not versatile, he's not going to be around. And he's doing okay. Tsutsugo, I've heard a lot of guys talking about WBC fatigue, and they've been making excuses for some of the guys who have been out there. But I think we've seen this before, is when you have to compete and you have this playoff atmosphere in the preseason, and then you rejoin your club, and the games don't seem to mean as much because there are more of them, or you even play a couple of preseason games and then you come into the regular season. I think there's a mental factor there. I can't say it's fatigue or anything, but I think there's something that tells you, okay, well, it's okay to lose these games. We don't have the pressure that we had before. And I know that's not the forefront. It might be something that is subconscious, that you think, okay, it's okay to lose, or not, you know, there's no pressure. There's not as much pressure to win. And I think that's what we might be seeing, because he's off to a bad start. Some of the other WBC guys are off to sluggish starts, and everybody's been talking about them being fatigued. And I'm like, what do you mean fatigued? Some of these guys didn't even play. You know, a lot of the Norimoto, we expected Takahiro Norimoto to pitch in the WBC. He didn't. As we spoke about last week, Ayumu Ishikawa of the Marines was supposed to pitch the final, and he didn't have to pitch. So he was rested. Fatigue? What are we talking about here? We're just making excuses, and I just think there's too much of that. I just think it's a different mindset.
Well, speaking of the subconscious, Dr. John, I always thought he was a musician and a composer, but now I know he's the next.
He is licensed. He is accredited.
Talk show call-in, pseudo quack.
Hashtag high heat.
Subconscious, man. Let's move on. I think as soon as I hear somebody on baseball talking about the subconscious, I want to say, man, that's a Freudian slip to start with. Let's move on, man.
Are you questioning my credentials, sir?
Never do that, man. Nah.
No, I just, I mean, for me as a player, I would think, okay, I know that I was in a high-pressure situation, and now the pressure is off. And not that it's okay, but it's just different.
Sure, it is different. Okay, I mean, I'll grant you that. And I would also say that people don't all... Everybody doesn't start the season hot.
That too.
You know, some guys start the season cold. Some guys finish cold. You know, it happens. It's you know, it's A plus B equals C squared. You know, it's a confusing algorithm, but it happens. It's part of the rhythm of the game.
Right.
And speaking of truisms, it's part of the rhythm of the game. Wow, frame that one, baby. God.
I did want to acknowledge one thing, because I think I don't remember if Michael Westbay tried to mention this guy or not, but a ninth pick of the Bay Stars, Keita Sano,
mm-hmm.
out of Meiji University, got his first pro hit. He turned heads in the spring, and mm-hmm. I thought it was cute, and then he made the team, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then he got a hit.
He got the game-tying hit.
Yeah.
And the game ended up in a tie.
That just goes to show you it really doesn't matter what round you're picked in. It's whether you can play, whether you can perform. I don't care if you're the first pick or... like in this case, the ninth or tenth pick. You just don't see guys like that who are that low making the team usually in MPB.
No, you don't. It's pretty rare, because they do care a lot about that. Teams, you know, first round draft choices get basic. You know, it's not any different from the U.S. that they have higher expectations to go with them. And until they really stomp on those expectations, chew them up and spit them out, you know, and disrespect them, those guys are going to keep getting chances.
Wow, they got to do a lot of bad stuff then.
They do, pretty much, yeah. You know, what, axe murder? That's not an axe.
It just looks like one.
Exactly. It's a blunt instrument. It was an accident. The guy fell and cut his head open.
Oh, stop. Well, yeah, let's get back on track here and clean up this mess here.
Sorry for the blood, folks.
Yeah, in terms of opening impressions, it's so early, and I've always talked about this, and I'm sure the longtime listeners get tired of hearing, but at least let your team go through and play every team once at home and on the road before you start making assumptions about what you've
before
got.
You start making crazy early assumptions, then you can make the assumptions that won't hold up 2 months from now.
Right. 2 months or 3 months, you know, don't make too early a decision. I always talk about Bobby Valentine saying, you know, he would like to give his team 2 months before he evaluated. So I don't think it's too much to ask you to give your team a little bit of time, at least. I don't know if too much.
You sound like you're stumping for some charity. It's not too much to ask for your team. Please be charitable to your team.
Well, no, I mean,
some of them need it. You know,
I think I told you once before. I sat in the crowd one time and listened to. This is about 2013, I think it was, and I mm-hmm. sat in the crowd and listened to supposed fans of the Carp. This was at a Swallows game. Mm-hmm. The way they talked about the players they're supposed to be cheering for, they were just awful. And I thought, wait a second, you know, you're paying money to come here and see the team. Why are you saying such ugly things about the players? And I didn't get it. And then I realized fan doesn't really mean that you're sane. and the word means fanatic
or sober.
But I mean, you know, I said I want to stop doing that to my team too, because I always pick out a player who I expect to perform, and I set the expectations for them, and they don't meet my expectations. But we don't know the expectations of the players. The coaches might. But just because you've seen a guy hit a home run doesn't mean he's going to hit one all the time. So it's really hard to gather that in as a fan, and I keep that in mind when I watch. But I don't want people to think that it's really what you're seeing now is what your team is going to be the entire season. I think it's a long season; things are going to change. So, getting on with that, I think it's like we've dropped into a time machine, and we see guys like Shinnosuke Abe, who you mentioned last week on the show, doing really well. Hitoki Iwase of the Dragons, the pitcher, he's doing well. Kyuji Fujikawa, Seiichi Uchikawa, Takahiro Arai, a lot of guys performing at a high level. But what have the early impressions for you been?
Well, I guess the Rockton Eagles are the surprise. I didn't expect, you know, a lot of things I didn't expect to see out of that team. Kind of decent starting pitching.
Exactly.
And decent, and not only decent, but not starting pitchers who you know, start well or start poorly, but who get out of it and move on. I've watched a couple of their games, and I'm watching guys, you know, get into trouble and look like they're completely lost, and then come back in the next inning, and they've like figured something out. And I'm saying, this is not this is a new step for this guy. You know, it used to be random. It looks more planned and more controlled than before. I see good base running, which is something we haven't seen. We haven't seen a lot. We saw more last year. Then, of course, everybody has better base running than when Dave Okubo is pulling the switches.
Just everybody, just go.
That's right.
Just run.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that was just, I don't want to throw any more pejoratives his way, but that was pretty messy. And so they've had really good base running. They've played some very sharp defense. I've seen a lot of interesting things, you know, in terms of some of the teams. The Fighters have played exceptional defense some days, and other days they look like, you know, what are these gloves for?
Yeah, well, getting back quickly to Rockton for a second, I know that they matched the club record by winning their first two series to open the season, and also they started 4-0 for the first time in club history, and they
matched the team's longest winning streak in history
to open a season.
They've never won. It said Rinascita says, oh, actually, I take that back. He said last year they never won four games in a row.
Okay, that sounds right. Yeah, and then the seasons that they did start out 3-1 were 2009 and 2013, and those are the two times that they went to the playoffs.
Wow.
So that bodes well for them. And then,
so print the tickets. because it's not too early to get excited.
How about this? How about we just start with a design of the tickets and we won't print them yet? We'll just start making a design. Get some samples out there so we can start talking about it. Okay,
Doc.
Okay, settle down. And then guys like Hijirisawa, the guy whose name I mess up every time I try to say it, he's actually hitting fairly well. And they won on Saturday at Zozo Marine Field or Stadium or whatever it is this year.
Stadium.
Yes, I know. I did that on purpose. Manabu Mima, the guy who he almost threw a no-hitter there last year, he pitched well. So it looks like they found a stadium where he can really pitch well. Windy place where it doesn't matter how, you know, erratic his control is with those sliders. Right?
Wow.
I don't know. It seems like he only pitches well there. I can't remember a bad game. I think he had one bad game there last season, but I don't remember him pitching poorly.
Well, I'm not going to look for it.
I'm not going to look for it either. But I'm sorry. I know you were going on with the Fighters, and you can continue.
No, I was moving on.
Yeah.
I don't know so many other impressions. The Hanshin Tigers have been weird.
That's a good word.
Well, they're weird. You know, they were in these big high run scoring games, and then they started playing games at Koshien, and then that stopped. The Giants have been consistently good. Archimedes Caminero has been quite good as their new back of the bullpen guy, which was a question mark for me, because they had Sawamura. And I was, you know what shocked me about Sawamura?
No, what?
That he led the league in saves last year, because it
didn't seem like it.
No, exactly. I'm thinking, here's this guy who comes out with a, you know, baseball in one hand and a bomb in the other. And you think, how often is that bomb gonna blow up before the game's over?
Yeah, it just seems like he's pulling the pin on that hand grenade first before he throws a pitch.
That's right. So it was that kind of season, and he led the league in saves, and I'm going, I watched that. I almost wanted to call this TV station. Are you sure?
Yeah, and I'm with you with the Tigers being weird. They're just unpredictable. And well, you pointing out that the fact that they played some high scoring games on the road, and then they went to Koshi, and they actually played a couple games at Kyocera as well,
which used to be a big run scoring park,
right? And again, I didn't like their defense. I don't think that's going to get better in the outfield unless they change the personnel, but I do think they're going to do better on the infield. But again, we've got guys like Fumihito Haraguchi at first base, and he'll get better. I mean, but it's a matter of time for him. He's going to have to put in the time and get used to the position. And Toritani at third is probably a better spot for him, but that's not the greatest spot for a guy who doesn't really have that great an arm. And I'm not saying he can't get the ball across the field. I'm saying it's a consistently 140 plus games. I don't think that's a good formula for success.
So he's not going to win a gold glove at third.
I mean, he can catch the ball. I don't think that he's going to have too many problems fielding the ball. I think that just all that throwing on a body that's aging and had shown some decline. But he's hitting well. I think he's leading the league in hitting.
Well, gee, I'll tell you, having Itoi in there, Itoi's like going, gosh, I love being back in Kansai.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we went to college, played, you know, where he was a pitcher in college, and he's going, wow, I can get that. I get used to this. But I can't say I've seen Shintaro Fujinami has yet to do anything this spring, which is a disappointment. I'd have bigger hopes for him. I kind of want to mention the Carp, because one of the concerns of Hiroshima was that I wrote in my preview was the back of the rotation. You know, all these sort of so-so results from their younger pitchers,
right,
in the past, and trying to, you know, because basically Hiroki Kuroda threw like 150 innings last year, and Okada could pitched well last year, and he could pick up about 50 of those maybe, and then you've got guys like Alan Curry, and you've got the rookie, and I'm thinking, well, you know, this is going to be interesting. But Alan Curry and I always chat when I see him, because, you know, he's also an Alan, and he's always positive, and I keep saying, you know, he's, I'm going to do better. I'm saying, man, you got to do better. I'll have to go to the Iwaki, you know, to Yamaguchi Prefecture to see you play in the Western League.
Yeah, well, he did. He did have a good start. I think he won the
game.
And
he looked good. I mean, he pitched well.
He pitched
well. Which was the thing. I've seen, you know, he's had good starts before where he, you know, they were Brian Bullington games where he won, and you wish everybody just leaves it at that.
Right, and you talked about, I mean, the thing that I've seen from him is in an at-bat or in a sequence, he'll have six good pitches and then one pitch that shouldn't be thrown, you know, or he just misses. He just has that one mistake.
Well, that's those were his good games.
So
because
the consistency has been the problem. Those were the good games.
Well, 6-6-1, that's a good ratio for most guys. For him, I think it was more like 3-2.
So, and then you talked about Okada picking up maybe 50 innings of the lost Kuroda 150, and not if he keeps throwing 147 pitches like he did last night.
Wow. Speaking of pitches.
Or yesterday. Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of pitches and yesterday, how about Hideaki Wakui, as I mentioned on Twitter? I mean, I almost wrote in my story who throws more than anybody else, and I went back and checked, and my, you know, it's like, he doesn't like throw more than anybody else. He just throws more than anybody else who's still alive.
Yeah, the tweet was a great tweet. You said, "Why don't you say he's basically
since 2006, Hideaki Wakui's thrown 1.3% of all the starts in NPB, and he's got like close to 13% of the
140 plus
pitch counts.
Yeah."
Yeah, when you get to the 130 to 139 range, he drops down to about 7%.
Yeah.
But basically, he's the guy who throws a lot of pitches. And yesterday at 120, I don't know. Well, I know what they were thinking. Oh, he just got two outs. He's got a runner on second. And I can have him face one more batter, except it was a tie game in the sixth inning, and one more batter turned into four, and then it turned into a losing game.
Yeah.
So I wasn't watching the pitches, but it looked ugly. It might not have been ugly. I think I trust Itosan more than manager stomach to him more than just to say he was leaving him out there to see, you know, just to get out of the inning.
Yeah. And speaking of Lotte, I saw some responses on Twitter, especially from fans, that they were surprised that they lost the first three games. I mean, they're playing the SoftBank Hawks in the first three, and they had lost the first two by the time we talked to you guys last week, and they went on to lose the third game of that opening series. But it was no surprise, given the guys they put on the mound and the guys that they were facing. I think it was very foreseeable. And, they didn't put Ishikawa out there. Jason Standridge didn't pitch until they went home, and he didn't have a great first outing. So they're off to a bad start, or a sluggish start. I don't think it's the end of the world. I think they're gonna compete. Chihaya Sasaki, the rookie pitcher who the Marines won the rights to sign in a lottery on draft day, he won in his debut. Now, he only went five innings, but he only gave up three hits. He walked a bunch of guys, but he looks like they're gonna be able to use him, which is they need guys.
They need
innings. Yeah, they need pitchers.
Offense is gonna score runs, but they're gonna provided Jimmy Paredes eventually hits, which I think he will, but I don't see it as being that the spine loss is going to be big for them, but other guys look healthy. I mean, the lineup looks pretty good, to be honest.
It does, and the lineup seems like it's going to produce. So I think the sluggish start is just a reflection of getting used to just the newness. I mean, there's no Despaigne, there's no set lineup. I think there's a feeling out phase too with the Lotte Marines in terms of the new guys they have in there. I tell you this though, I talked about it last year. It looks to me a lot like Tatsuhiro Tamura is one of the best catchers in Japan in MPB. Mm. He's really developed.
Well, I think that was he came out, and the thing with him was he could catch. He looked like he was going to be the guy with the Marines who could really catch. And then last year he looked like the catcher who could really hit.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks like the complete package. It was kind of a disappointment. Well, I don't know. It's really hard because of Ginjiro Sumitani. It's hard to be recognized as really good in the Pacific League.
It is, and he's a really good defensive catcher.
I think so. I think he is too. I think he's probably better. He's the best right now. I think he's better than Sumitani, or at least he's as good, and he can hit, which Sumitani does when on occasion.
Yeah, Tamura is really, really developed. Now, I want to talk about the Dragons very quickly because
We have to put. Okay, the clock's running. Go.
Katsumori finally got his first win. It was Friday, 7-5. They beat the Bay Stars. They had to come back to do it. So, they've been losing, obviously. And they threw out Tomoyo Yagi against the Carp the other night. And I'm thinking, well, why even bother? Just because he has good numbers historically against the Carp, you're going to give him a start? And he wasn't bad. He had not really given up runs to the Carp in a few starts. And
It was kind of a thing this past week is let's take some guy who had success with the Nippon Ham Fighters and throw him out in the Central League and see what happens.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yoshikawa pitching, he pitched pretty well for the Giants. So, hey, but it could be just we'll show this guy one time, we'll basically throw him out there until people light him up and then, introduce him to the farm team.
Yeah. Well, I think, Yagi had some real success against the Carp, and so they threw him out there. And anyway, they ended up losing. I was scratching my head. I was looking at the lineups. I don't know. I understand wanting to get these young players some time. And Yota Kyoda, the guy they put at shortstop, the rookie, over Naomichi Donoue. I think it's really tough for the Dragons to score runs with the lineup that Mori's putting out there. It's punchless. I talked about how I expected Dayan Viciedo to be sent down to the minors soon, and all he's done is hit a bunch of mistakes. Now, I told you guys downward breaking pitches that are right down the middle he has trouble hitting, and pitchers are just missed consistently. And they're trying to tease the strike zone with these fastballs, but they keep getting them over the plate, and he keeps whacking them. So he's hitting really well. Although he turned into Ichiro. He's not hitting for power. He's just hitting singles, but at least he's hitting. And but they only have two guys, you know, basically, maybe three. Alex Guerrero is struggling to make consistent contact. And then you've got Viciedo, and then you've got Ryosuke Hirata. And those three guys are the guys who are going to beat you. The other guys really can't really generate any runs.
Well, Oshima is a pretty good player, and he's playing well. So
he's not going to generate runs for you most of the time. He'll be on base and be an RBI if you can knock him in. But
we're going to go there again, are we?
Well, I am, but maybe not you.
No, I'm staying away from that. That's I'll just let you have the last word on that one.
Okay, and then the pitching has been off and on, mostly it's been okay, but they had to use the reliever Katsuki Matayoshi on Wednesday, and he threw 4 1/3 innings, and then he came back and had to throw a bunch of innings on Saturday, and it was Friday, and get that when they got that first win. So that's not a formula for success. And Clark even tweeted back to me. Matt Clark says, I'm still available. I mean, they need some pop in that lineup. They need somebody to hit for power and hit.
But also, you know, some wise guy once said, you know, don't worry too much about what happens in the first month or 2 months of the season. And here's John's throwing the Dragons. Well, I understand what you're saying. You don't see the result. You're not seeing the result of a solid plan here, and I think that can be that's disheartening when Wakui went to Lotte and he was the opening day starter. We all wrote the Marines off before the start of the season.
Yeah.
So don't just because it doesn't, and sometimes because it doesn't look like a plan doesn't mean there isn't one. I think things don't go according to plan, and so you have to make adjustments. And what we're seeing could be more adjustments, you know, temporary measures more than actual design. So I'm willing to cut people a little slack. When you see too much weird stuff, well, then you're allowed to panic after 10 days.
Okay.
So tonight you can panic.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the Tuesday fracas that happened between the Yakult Swallows and the Hanshin Tigers. Shintaro Fujinami has just been an enigma. We don't even know what's going on with him. He hits Kazuhiro Hatakeyama with a pitch that looked like it got him in the head, but it actually went off his shoulder first.
Yeah. He had his shoulder... His head was shrugged down behind his shoulder, and it hit the shoulder.
Yeah. I think it did actually hit off the helmet after it glanced shoulder. Yeah, so I think I watched this about a bajillion times, and, you know, both teams met, and they usually come out, and there's a little bit of pushing and some shoving. And
yeah,
some
more
yelling.
I've seen more violent, meishi exchanges, you know, name cards.
business card exchanges,
Going out there and saying, oh, yeah, okay, well, yeah, I'm new with the Dragons this year. I was with the Rakuten last year, but this year I'm with Hanshin. Okay, nice to see you. And, but this time there was actually... some judo action, you know, people were they were pulling on each other and trying to tip each other over, and it was okay. Since I didn't pay, you know, I watched a little bit on YouTube afterwards, and basically it started like this. Vladimir Valentin had hit a home run off Fujinami, and I'm guessing that may have had something to do with his taking umbrage about Fujinami pitching close to anybody. And so when Hatakeyama gets hit, basically Hatakeyama hits the dirt, and then when he dusts himself off, he starts looking at Fujinami like, man, somebody's got to teach you a lesson, kid. Now, Hatakeyama is, again, sensitive because he spent basically the entire last year being hurt.
And he spends a lot of seasons being hurt.
Well, he's had a couple of less so than most of the Swallows, but he had a bad year last year, and he had a but he was I think that was an issue, and he came out to sort of have a little discussion, and his teammates surrounded him, And as soon as his Swallows teammates went to keep Hatakeyama out of trouble, that triggered everything. The Tigers are going, hey, they're keeping their guy out of trouble. Let's make sure there's trouble to keep him out of.
Right.
And so then, that's what it looked like. That's what they were doing, is trying to stop it. And instead they started it.
Yeah, well, and then Coco Ballantyne comes in with a kind of an elbow that hit Akihiro Yano, who is the Hanshin strategy and battery coach, and he kind of went nutty. He got up and...
Yeah, he went after him.
Tried to retaliate with this flying Pee Wee Herman-type kick, and it was really goofy, and those two ended up getting ejected, and...
And there was more, and then, of course, it seemed like it was just sort of settling. You know, people were pushing and shoving and exchanging name cards around home plate. And then Ballantyne charged into it, and he really energized it. And then it was sort of like, oh, wow, something happened. And then when Yano went bananas and started chasing Ballantyne, then it got heated up, and there was even more jostling and, you know, and judo-type moves and stuff. So... It was that's about as fierce as it gets in NPB without Rod Allen chasing the pitcher around Yokohama Stadium.
And I have this, I think the image that I'll keep with me, other than the photos that went out on Twitter and the internet and all those other things, was Yakult starter David Buchanan with a lock hold on Coco Ballantyne, trying to prevent him from potentially damaging his hands or something trying to get into a fight with someone. So anyway, Yano was fined 150,000 yen and Coco Ballantyne got 200,000 yen. And I didn't read a breakdown of the fines, but I just have to believe that Coco was an aggressor starting with that elbow, and that's probably why he got the 50,000 yen extra. I don't know. I first tweeted that probably a kick should be more expensive than an elbow, but
They have a different point scoring system than you do. so you know, it's the NPB WWF. And the other interesting thing from that is, of course, David Buchanan won his NPB debut in that game and pitched really well. That, you know, it didn't seem to bother him. It's like, oh, good, I needed a little break here, a little entertainment in the middle of this game. So, congratulations to him, and glad that those guys got their settled out, and, you know, they got their name cards exchanged properly, so maybe we won't see that again.
Yep, yeah, he did, and it was fun. Okay, a couple notes. We've got to get Josh Whitesell back into NPB because people keep conking catchers on the head with their backs on the backswing. So I remember 2012 for some reason he ended up being sent down, and there was an apology issued when he was playing with the Marines. So we had Motohiro Shima of Rakuten got conked twice, and Kenya Wakatsuki of Oryx also got hit. So be careful, guys. And a lot of the guys I said needed to snap out of it and wake up, and most of those guys seem to have woken up. I mean, Ballantyne is doing well. Kensuke Kondo of the Fighters is doing well.
Yeah.
Matsuda of SoftBank is doing well. Still sleeping are Hisayoshi Chono, who got benched with the Giants, and I think Chunichi skipper Mori is kind of in a stupor. So snap, snap to you guys.
Snap, snap.
Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so first I wanted to acknowledge some of the listeners who responded when I asked what your predictions were, and I wanted to read them on the show, but we're running out of time here, so I'll just thank you at Daniel Bream and at Free Honda, Mark K, Bokke Kun, Michael K, not that Michael K of Yankees fame, he says.
Yeah, no, Michael.
And then Pete Duffy and at Stewart, those guys,
Good to hear from y'all.
And I threw out all of their first choices and went with their second place votes. And the team that got the... I just assumed that these guys were voting for their team to finish first. But I could be assuming too much. But some of them did, I'm sure of it. Anyway, so I counted up the second place votes. And the team that got the most second place votes was the Harp.
Interesting.
And then the Bay Stars. All right, so we have a question this week from Max in Los Angeles, and it's an NP3.
Wow.
Hi, JBW. In the seasons where the baseball has been juiced in Nippon Professional Baseball, Is that something that was orchestrated by the commissioner's office and Mizuno or other powers that be? Also, quick prediction, I believe Carlos Peguero of the Rakuten Eagles will hit 40 to 50 home runs this season. That is, if they're still pitching to him and he's still healthy by the end of the year. Thank you.
Can we have Max as like kind of like a guest DJ?
I love that voice, and I love his.
I know.
Yeah, a guest DJ. Well, you have to play music then.
It's baseball is a kind of artistic form, you know.
Okay. Well, I love the pronunciation of the Peguero too. Peguero.
Yeah.
Peguero. I can't say it either.
Peggy Sue.
So obviously we did talk about this extensively in 2011, the balls, but I want to point out one important thing, and those shows are still out there on iTunes if you want to go back, and I highly recommend them because that was in the midst of what was going on and it was more detailed. But the main issue was the old coefficient of restitution, as we all know. And when you say juiced, I think we're talking juiced as opposed to a little more lively, and I think juiced is a little extreme. Is kind of inflammatory to me. It kind of seems like there's an intent to make the game more exciting or to change the ball to make a heavy impact, and I don't think that was even the guy who did this thing. And we have to get into answering your question, but so the balls were supposed to average a 0.423 coefficient of restitution, but Mizuno supplied balls that averaged 0.426. So again, this is 0.4234 versus 0.426. It's not that big a difference. It's very slight. No physicist, okay? First, but that's not juice to me. That's just a little livelier.
Well, you know, the question's a little bigger than that, because the lively balls go back a long way in Japan, and Mizuno is I once did a column back when I was permitted to doing columns.
Yikes.
It was called Dial M for something or other. Dial M for home runs or something. And it was we've had three versions of lively balls in Japan.
Okay.
Okay, the first one was basically the Pacific League it started, I think, in 1978 or 79 with a couple of teams, and they really, 1980, I think we saw the saw the Kintetsu Buffaloes hit 239 home runs in a 130-game season, which at that time was for a long time a record. But that year we had a lot of home runs in the Pacific League. Basically, the Hankyu Braves, the Kintetsu Buffaloes. I know that the Nippon Ham Fighters were also using these lively Mizuno balls that year in their home games. And the question that Max asked was a good one, because the teams used to be in charge of which balls they used.
Right. So when you go to a different park, you would play with a different ball.
Exactly. And it was really confusing. And I don't want to go into the details of this, but if you go back to the old shows, you might hear some of that. Essentially, teams were allowed to pick balls that were approved, whose makers' products were approved by the commissioner's office. Now, the word is Mizuno basically sold really, really lively balls. And I asked one of the people with the commissioner's office back around 1999, when it was becoming apparent that Mizuno balls were just going crazy. The Pacific League was switching out from other balls to all Mizuno. And every time they did it, the home run totals increased. And I was asking, and I said, is it the true that the balls always pass the test? And he says, no. And he said, basically, and so is Mizuno the problem? He said, basically, yeah, most of the times the balls fail the test and we have to ask for more until they pass our Mizuno. That's how they used to do it. So they, if these don't work, send us another box to test.
Right.
So Mizuno was a problem in 1980. It calmed down for a while. It got to there were so many home runs that people became aware of it, and it became sort of like, well, let's not hit too many. And then the next quest, the Lively Ball 2, that was in 1980. Lively Ball 2 came toward the end of the 90s. Again, Mizuno. And I'm not certain, but I've always had a suspicion that the Yomiuri Giants were part of that because I think they were disappointed with the number of home runs that Hideki Matsui was hitting. With the advent of the introduction of Nagoya Dome.
Okay.
Took a huge number of home runs out of the Central League away from they took one of the the smallest ballparks and replaced it with the biggest. And I think that was a problem. So I think the Giants were a part of that. I don't think they were the principal benefactors of that. But that was Lively Ball 2. And at the same time, the Pacific League was changing. All the Pacific League teams were changing to Mizuno. And that happened. That lasted until 2004 when it was becoming so obvious. People started talking about it about 2002. I mean, I'd been writing about it since 1999, but people were talking about it from 2002. And by 2004, the Chunichi Dragons basically blew the whistle and said, look, we're not going to use a Lively Ball when you play these big home run hitting teams in our park. And right. The Giants... 2004. This was 2004, just to be clear. And the Yomiuri Giants pretty much said, well, that's not fair. You can't like suddenly decide to use a dead ball when we play you, which is what they did. That's not fair. The Dragons won the pennant that year. And Mizuno came out and said, well, we're going to produce a less lively ball. It forced them to apologize for making the ball too easy to hit. So, okay, that was Lively Ball 2, and that lasted until about 2010. And then they had, then the new ball came in. And then the last one you were talking about, which was where the commissioners made the ball too dead in 2011 and 2012. So people behind the scenes changed it to make it a little more lively.
Right.
Sorry to be so long-winded there, folks.
Yeah, so in essence, was this an effort by the league or by one person? It was basically...
My opinion don't count, so I'm not going to give it, but essentially it was some people in NPB, I think, asked Mizuno to change the ball. Some teams wanted it. And then they needed a scapegoat, and they made the commissioner a scapegoat.
Right. Okay. And then the second part of the question about Peguero, I just talked to Dennis Sarfate yesterday, and that interview will be for next week's show, so you guys already know who's going to be on. Mm. And he talked about the fact that Peguero is very adept at hitting off-speed pitches.
Mm.
And... He can of course catch up with some fastballs and some misplaced ones, which he has done, but he's hitting all speed pitches for home runs as well. So 40, 50, that's kind of lofty. I can't name a guy who has done that, but Jim did some research.
Yeah. First 2 years, import, export, they're all imports. People who hit 40-plus home runs in their first 2 years in NPB. There have been 16 such seasons. The guys who appear on the list twice, they hit 40-plus home runs in their first 2 seasons in NPB.
Oh, I think I got one.
Okay, you go for it.
Tyrone Woods.
Righto.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Trivia.
That just came to me. And then another one I thought might have been... now the name escapes me. Yeah.
You got him. I know you got him.
Adam Riggs is the name that comes to me.
Well, no, actually, Adam Riggs and the pizza story, that'll have to stay. That'll have to go for another show. Adam Riggs didn't hit his 40th home run, and I didn't buy him a pizza. Okay, so the three are the first was Tony, the late great Tony Solita, hit. For the Nippon Am Fighters in 1980 and 1981, juice. The other guy who hit 40 home runs in his first 2 seasons in NPB was Alex Cabrera.
Alex Cabrera, okay.
But we've had have done it. So it's not. I was thinking, who's done it? Nobody. But it has happened numerous times, and so it's not. it's not that unlikely that Pigueto would hit 40 this year. It's not as unlikely as I thought it would be. But great questions. Great questions, Max.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, he predicted it. So I'll be back in Los Angeles in December. So if he does get to it, I will buy the donuts at Yum Yum Donuts and with a coffee. And
wow.
If he hits 39, you owe me some Yum Yum Donuts and a coffee. How's that, Max?
I don't hear him laughing, so I only hear John laughing.
Well,
so.
You laugh for him. You laugh on his behalf.
Ho, ho, ho.
And we will laugh through the whole next week, and we will talk to you next week. We appreciate you guys listening, and it should be another great week of baseball this week, so enjoy your baseball.
Talk to you next week.